Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Fishburner again. Today we have Yaniv and Nia to talk about F the Slice, and we'll find out what it's all about. Before we do that, we would like to acknowledge the traditional custodian of the land, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. We are grateful for them having us using their land. Ladies and gentlemen, put our hands together for Yaniv and Nia.
This episode of the Startup Podcast is brought to you by Vanta. You might know that sinking feeling. You're about to land a big contract when they ask about compliance. SOC 2, ISO, PCI, Essential 8. You've just snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. Not anymore. Vanta massively accelerates your compliance efforts and allows you to get those life-changing deals back on track. Don't wait until it's panic stations, though. Get started with Vanta today. They're offering 20% off their prices just for TSP listeners. Do yourself a favor. Hit pause. Go to vanta.com/TSP. That's VANTA.com to get that 20% off.
You're listening to the Startup Podcast. This is an educational episode. In-depth masterclasses about the concepts essential to building, running, and investing in Silicon Valley-style startups. Whether you're a founder, investor, or operator in a startup, you'll gain insights into the principles that power high-growth disruption the same way Facebook, Google, and Uber do it. The conversation starts now.
Hi, I'm Yaniv Bernstein.
Here's Avala.
Welcome to this first ever, as well as being a presentation, this is the first ever live episode of the Startup Podcast. So we've been doing this for 2 years, over 100 episodes, and this is the first one that we've been doing live. So really excited to have Neron actually for the second time to talk about his book, The State of Pitching, and how to improve and master your pitch. So I guess we should, before we get started, also note that given the title of the book, there will be rude words in this presentation. So if that's a problem for you, consider yourselves warned.
Did I tell you the thing that when I started to work on the book, people told me you have to change the title. It won't work. And I said, okay, we'll give it a try. And no matter what I did, I came back to this. And I said, you know what? We'll have to deal with it.
Yep.
So.
Okay, so why did you call your book Fuck the Slides?
I've been working with startups since 2017, and I started my journey about 15 or 18 years ago in marketing and branding. Working with startups, I was invited to do marketing, but I couldn't understand what they were doing. And then I was invited to visit demo days, 10 companies pitch for 3 minutes each. Great. Nothing was inspiring. Nothing was interesting. I could barely even recall what they were talking about. And when we started to work with the next round of startups, I noticed that they focus so much on the slides. There's no story. It's not interesting, not inspiring, and I can't remember anything. I said, you know what? Can you put the slides away? Come back with a good story. Which they didn't know what to do with. So guess what? 2 weeks later, they came in. They have great slides. Still no story. At some point, I said, you know what? Fuck the slides. No slides. You're not allowed to use slides. And that took me on a 2-year journey to help them understand how to create a story.
Yeah. It's actually, last time we spoke, there was a quote you said that I took away from it that resonated with me, which is you said, storytelling as humans is the skill that we use the most, but we practice the least. So I'm interested in diving in on that a little bit more. And also, you know, you talk about the slides and all of this and the difference between presenting and pitching, or presenting and telling a story. Because I think in your view, pitching is a particular type of storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We walk, most of us, every day to work. But if I ask you, when was the last time you practiced to improve your walking, you don't do that. Which is the same thing. We go home now and we say, oh, I had a great day. You won't believe who I met or what happened. Could be a very interesting story, and it could be a very boring story. Yet we never practice what is the reaction and how it happens. And we all know that person in the pub who has the best stories, because they understand how to tap into emotions and what is that soft skill. And I think because people allowed us to call it a soft skill, then it's okay if we don't practice. It's like playing a guitar, where I think it is a must skill. More than that, I think it's not storytelling. I think it's story writing. Only when we start writing can we actually start measuring what we're saying.
So, like you said, you've gone on a 2-year journey and you've released your book. Apparently, it's gotten on the Amazon bestseller list, so congratulations for that. So tell us maybe a bit of a distillation of what's in the book and what is your... I mean, I guess it's less of a method, or more of a philosophy and approach to really being able to create and craft a great pitch. And, you know, whether it is for raising capital or for sales or for hiring or anything else, how do you approach that?
I want to make a quick note. People who started to read the book we've been working with have noticed that they improve in every aspect of their life because they become better storytellers.
And the book's premise is you are already a storyteller. That's what we do all day, every day. That's how we convince our spouses to take us on a vacation. That's how we raise capital. That's how we improve our sales funnels. So the idea is, can we actually understand what is needed to improve as soft skill, which is now a must skill? Can we understand how the audience interacts with our information? And then what is the structure? So every chapter covers something different about how to create that method. By the way, there is a chapter about slides, because guess what? Startups must present slides. But then we need to understand it.
That's it, I'm leaving.
There's a completely different aspect to being able to pitch without the slides. And what happens when we go on stage and we say, you know what, I apologize, but our projector doesn't work. Then people panic. Why do they panic? Because they haven't written it. Now you're improvising. In reality, we're using the slides the wrong way because they became the crutch. So now everybody knows this concept where we don't need a lot of text. We only have two or three words or a bullet point. Well, you're lying. The bullet point is for you. It's not for the audience. So yeah, that's the key thing.
Yeah, I see two kinds of slides very commonly, and I detest both of them. So the one, like you said, is the bullet points. And I call that, this is the kind that I'm most guilty of. It's speaker's notes that you just happen to be sharing with everyone. You're sort of looking at your slides and using them as a reminder. And then the other is the kitchen sink, right? You are, what you're trying to do, and you use the word crutch, Nira, and I think that's really true. It's because you don't understand, or because the folks are not comfortable, let's say, with the art of storytelling, instead of telling a story, they're like, I am going to make some really beautiful slides, and I'm going to put more and more information in it. In those slides, I'm going to have diagrams and graphs and 20 bullet points and 15 testimonials and everything. And somehow I feel like I'll wrap myself in these slides, right? So instead of learning how to tell a good story, I am going to use these slides more than just as a crutch, as a shield from having to do what I actually need to do.
So the problem is we became so reliant on the slides. When we take them away and we say, for example, we go to a startup and we say, you need to add a bit of storytelling, which is a scary thing because it doesn't mean anything. It's a great buzzword. What does it actually mean? And the problem is a startup wants to get, let's say, $10 million. Great. So we assume that if I throw every piece of information to the audience, something might stick, but it's not how we operate. Why do we use stories? It's a great way to convey an emotion and a message within that. And the whole idea is that if we take the 500 words, which is 3 minutes, when you do a demo day, 3 minutes is about 500 words. If we can craft a good story in that, magic happens. Now, we believe that we're going to a demo day or every type of meeting, and it's a zero-one sum. I either pitch and get the money, or I'll never have another chance. But it's not. It's a process to get the story better. And technically, I don't need to sell everyone. The right people will buy it. So if we take the edge off and we don't panic about that pitch, then the aim is to create a story that when I leave, and you will ask me, so how did it go? I will, for 100% certainty, will be able to tell you it went exactly according to plan. Whereas today you will say, yeah, I think it went well.
So you mentioned the audience before, and I think when you talk about storytelling and when you talk about communications in general, it's really about your audience. And I think what happens, raising money is scary. So let's use raising money as an example, but it can also happen for sales or hiring. It a lot of this, I think, tell me if you agree, comes from a lack of confidence, right? And I think founders, especially first-time founders, they're asking for a lot of money, millions of dollars, like you say. And I think at some level, a lot of folks don't even believe that it's possible, or, you know, at some deep level. And what they do then is they go for a little bit of a cargo cult. They go online and they're like, you know, what do pitch decks look like? What slides should I have in my pitch deck? You've got your competition and you've got your TAM and you've got, you know, your team and all these things. I'm not saying it's wrong to have those things in your deck, but what you're doing is effectively coloring by numbers, where you're like, okay, I'm just taking this set of slides, which, like I said, is not bad if you understand why those slides are there. But instead of understanding why your slides are there, you just kind of fill them in and then you talk through the slides. And in that sense, you've lost control of your story. And so, Nir, I think you mentioned this before, and I'd love you to elaborate a bit. At the end of the day, you're asking for money, or more to the point though, you are trying to create a feeling or a sentiment in your audience that they would like to invest in you, right? So you actually have a very specific task here with your storytelling, which is, how do I get my audience to believe that I am a good investment? And then you work backwards from there.
If I'll tell you that if you give me $100, I'll give you back $1,000. It's a good deal. If you don't take it, it's a bit weird. If you're willing to trust me, I might be able to 10x your money. When we're doing a sales pitch, you have a problem. Guess what? I might have the solution for you. The problem is, I then have no idea what I'm saying. I know I want to tell you this, but I've never actually written and measured. And the book explains the KPIs for storytelling. So instead of starting with all the bullet points and all the pieces of information, which we all know, you open a PowerPoint, problem, solution, the product, the roadmap, how much money we need to raise, and so on. What if we said, wait, what am I going to talk about? Why is it interesting? What type of emotions do I need to evoke within you to say, I like it, I get it, I understand it. What are the key messages? Now, the currency we trade when we tell a story is an emotion. A few years ago, I was invited to work with a startup, prep them for a demo day, which was great. They do a solution for airlines, helping them lose less luggage, which is great. I don't care about that. I'm not an airline. Every single person in this room most probably can understand or relate how it feels when we're standing in front of the belt on a vacation waiting for that suitcase. And it just, no, not my suitcase. The vacation's ruined. My new swimsuit is gone.
I'm so sorry.
But if it does arrive, you're so happy. Every person in that room, 60 VCs, could relate. And they nodded because they feel it. Now I'm taking you on a journey. Now we're going somewhere. And then I can elaborate how I'm going to solve that problem. And that takes us into the solution where, what if you could pitch only 3 minutes, about 500 words, and that is called the trailer pitch. When you go to the movies and you have your popcorn and your soda drink and you sit there and you're looking at the trailers, and I love going to the movies, and you sit there and say, when the next Dune movie comes out, I'm dying to see it. Well, I didn't buy, I didn't commit, I didn't do anything except say I'm interested. And my offering to you is, don't go into a meeting 0-1 sum, but rather, I'm trying to show you what we have, same as a trailer. If it's interesting, we can keep discussing. Thus, I don't need all the information. Okay? And people use the information to sell to themselves. Everything you said makes sense. I like it. It's interesting. It might be a bit expensive, might be a bit risky, but I'm going to go with it. Why? Because you made me feel good. Now, I'm asking, where did you ever write the emotions you want to convey to that audience? Well, we haven't.
Yeah. All right, there's a few things I want to sort of come back to from what you said. So one of my favorite VCs here in Australia, Ray Nong from Archangel. I'm sure a lot of you are aware of him because his social media game is on point. And one of the things I like about him is that he's very low bullshit, right? And he says to founders, when they come in, his early stage capital, he says, you have to tell me how I'm going to make 100 times my money back if I invest in you, right? I think I actually like that, because a lot of VCs are themselves in the act of storytelling, right? And they are there to say, I'm here to help founders. We believe in you and all of this. And which is not to say it's untrue or that it's a lie, but fundamentally, they are only going to invest in you if they think you're going to make them a lot of money. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's how the game is played. And so you sort of think, okay, that is ultimately what you need to convince your investor. And then you say, okay, there are very few investments that reliably return 10,000%, because if there were, then we'd all be investing in them. And so there's this sort of element of a leap of faith, especially at the early stages, right? And for that, you need to speak to emotion. So what we're doing here is we're working backwards, right? We're saying, okay, I need to convince this VC that I'm going to 100x their money. That's pretty crazy. What do they need to feel in order for that to be sufficiently non-crazy that they're going to get their checkbook out?
You're using the word VC because it's, again, okay, another cool buzzword. It's people.
People.
And at the
people
end,
with money.
People with money. You see them on the weekend sitting in the coffee place having the same issues you and I have. It doesn't really matter. We're talking to people. And over the last 12 months, I've been to 50 countries. I've done some of the pitching and now I know how many, 40 different cities. We're all the same. We might have differences in culture. Last year when I came here, they told me, when you go to Melbourne, don't be Israeli. They do business a bit different. I was like, okay. Now we go in and we do business in 15 minutes. Now, every country I went to, you go into the meeting and it's the same. We'll talk about the parking. We'll talk about the weather because we have to. Someone will make coffee. We'll sit and 20 minutes in, someone will start talking about the business. In the last 10 minutes, we'll rush to get everything done. Same thing happens every place. But in Melbourne, they told me they have time. Now, I love coffee, and you guys have great coffee. And it took me a while to understand what they meant. Well, it takes time. There's no meetings, which is fine. But the logic when we sit works the same thing. I need to convey the right emotions of why I'm here. Why is this relevant to you? I will then give you a glimpse of experience here, same as I did now with the luggage. The last or the third thing, which is important, is that the audience is very wise. I don't need to tell them anything, too much. Less is actually more. Sometimes when I won't tell you certain things, you can fill in the gaps. You know, I've written two novels. I don't know if I told you that.
You mentioned it.
And the first novel I wrote, I had no money. I went to the printing house and I told them, listen, print 500 copies. Here are checks. Don't put them in the bank. There's no money. I'll be back. And I lent a bicycle from a friend and I'm riding around the streets of Tel Aviv and I'm meeting friends and saying, hey, I wrote a book. Do you want it? It's like $15. And I keep doing it back and forth to go back and pay the printing house. And another 300 copies were sold as for the Jewish New Year as a gift to all the bartenders. And one weekend, the whole city, all the bartenders and waitresses were reading about their life in a book at the same time, which is cool. And the following week, I meet a good friend. She says, I loved your book on chapter 3, the bar you talk about. We used to go there all the time. I love that place. And I said, that's great, but that's not the bar. So what do you mean? Of course. And we're standing in the middle of a main street in the city arguing. And mind you, I wrote the book. Now it's their story. And it took me a while to figure it out. I need to understand that I can give you the information. It needs to be just enough information for you to fill in the gaps. The last piece is actually the data. And that's how I will convince myself that everything you said makes sense. It's interesting. You know what? I like that person. They made me feel something.
So I wanted to talk about storytelling and viewing it as a seduction, right? Because I think you talk about these multiple stages. And there's a quote that caught my eye, which I'll read out. I like reading out quotes because they make me seem smart. The principle here is that being able to have your story heard is a privilege that you earn, right? And so there's this guy called Herbert A. Simon. He was talking about the information economy. And he said, what information consumes is rather obvious. It consumes the attention of its recipients. Hence, a wealth of information creates a poverty of attention and a need to allocate that attention efficiently among the overabundance of information sources that might consume it. Now, I think this is true for everything these days, right? You talk about social media and everything like that. But again, let's talk about pitching, whether you are trying to sell something. You know, I've been a founder, the amount of cold inbound I get is insane. Or if you're a VC or investor, you are getting slide decks day in and day out. And you are not going to get an hour of their undivided attention at the beginning, right? They have a poverty of attention. And therefore, you need to earn the privilege of their attention. That is what you are buying at first, or that's what you are earning, is their attention, the right to go further. And I think that's one of the things when we talk about pitching and we talk about, you know, the trailer pitch, and then we sort of move on to the different stages. How do you think about that? And, you know, what is the life cycle of a pitch that has this sort of progressive structure around earning people's attention?
Last week, I got an email, 1,400 words, something like that. I met a guy in Bulgaria, and he said, I have a great idea. Can I pitch it to you? And I said, sure. I give him my card. A week passed, or I don't know how long. He said, I'm working on the pitch. I was like, no worries. Took him 4 months. 1,400 words, okay? That's like 3 articles in the newspaper. And I read it, and my reply email was like, sounds great, I just don't understand. What do you actually do? 1,400 words. So the trailer pitch, or the idea, is that what if we can use the first 15%, about 70 words, to help the audience understand what we actually do? Could be an example, a case study, a use, something that they understand. They say, I need to read more. I need to listen to this. And the next 2.5 minutes of my pitch are just to prove that point, just to give you a rehearse or a repetition or an expansion or whatever you need or you feel is the right thing for you. So it's 70 words as the hook.
So even with those 3 minutes, what you were saying is the first 30 seconds is you earning the right of the next 2.5 minutes of the person's attention. That is how scarce attention is these days, right? And you know, I think you talk about the hook. I'd love to go into that a bit more because it's a journey I've been on as well. I post quite a bit on LinkedIn. And again, a massive overabundance of information. And there's a sort of a frustration sometimes where you post something really worthwhile and it doesn't get any attention. And, you know, sometimes I think when I say I've been going on a journey, is you have to have a hook. And at first I thought it was pandering to the algorithm, which of course to a certain extent it is. But actually what you're saying is you don't want to cheapen your message, but you need to put something there that is a marker at the beginning that says the rest of this is worth reading and this is why.
Or look at it differently, maybe. I have a friend, I think he averages on LinkedIn 300 likes, which is a lot on LinkedIn, every post he has. He has a great hook, and then read more, always. We spoke a few weeks back, and he needs more work. And I was like, really? You have like 10,000 likes a week. He posts, I don't know how many times.
Likes.
Yeah, so, and he said, but you only get 12. And I said, yeah, but out of 12, I get 2 clients. So I know who or which buttons I want to press. I don't care about the likes. Same goes. I don't need every person on the planet to either like my content or invest in the company or have the right sale. In the end, I cater to a very specific audience with my clients or my marketing agency and stuff like that. We need the right clients. So we also need to define that, which most of us will say, I kind of know. And I encourage you, write it. Write your pitch, write the emotions, write the key message per paragraph. It's easier to write 30 or 40 words than it is to write or talk for 15 minutes. I record these sessions, by the way. I don't record them just for social media. I watch them and I'll notice I said something. And this is more improvised. But when I do the workshops, they're scripted. And I still try 3 new things, and I'll try and find 3 things I didn't do exactly as planned. And this is how we improve. But without the ability to write, we can't actually understand if I'm hitting the right notes and if I'm improving. And that's the fact.
I guess let's get a little bit more concrete now. I think we've set the scene quite well, right? We talked about the hook and the trailer pitch. And I know, like, we've got the toilet deck and then the actual in-person pitch and then the, you call it the Babylon deck. So maybe take us through the journey, which, I, you know, I think is very resonant. And I think folks going through a fundraise for the first time often misunderstand the different roles of each stage of that funnel.
Yeah. Let's take it through the classic VC, let's say. You're asked to send something before the meeting in many cases. While researching for the book, I learned 2 things. Most VCs read these slides in the morning in the toilet. And secondly, I definitely know that no matter what happens, I will not sit next to them when they read it in the toilet. Thus, the toilet deck. The idea here is I am not there to present. That means that you need to have more text. You need to explain more. It is not the same as the slides I would need when I present. 2 different things. In this case, every slide is a presentation. And when we go into the meeting, I am the presentation. So that's the one thing. You see, when we go into the meeting, I suggest to have a 3-minute well-structured pitch, not just because I can measure it. I'm not wasting a lot of time. It creates enough interest. Then we can move on to the next step. While I'm presenting the trailer pitch, if I need slides, and I'll give an example in a moment, then I am the presentation, and the slides play 1 of 2 roles. One would be how a scenery, I need to emphasize something, or the other one is a supporting role. I'm missing something, it needs to be visual, that's great. but they can never overshadow. Remember that at the end, if I need to read or understand or look at something, so people would say, I don't have text, but the diagram is so complex, I don't understand what it means, and I need to start like figuring it out, that means I'm not listening. At that moment, what is happening is the same as you sitting with your spouse on the weekend watching the movie, and you're saying, ah, I'm going to get the popcorn, don't stop the movie. You come back after 5 minutes and say, ah, what did I miss? And they'll get angry at you. So you're actually making your audience not listen, and they can't come back from that. We now have, by the way, a lot of angel investors, which I love, the last 3 or 4 years, who say, we'll jump on a call and you get 15 minutes, do whatever you want. A startup will pitch for 12 minutes, get one question in, they're done. Now we're teaching them how to do 3 minutes and then get as many questions as you can in. That's your chance. And for that, I explain in the book how to create what we call the Babylon deck. You see, if Babylon was the old city, was the biggest city, 350, 400,000 people, the libraries, the languages, the everything, all the information was stored there. Anything that you think that might be relevant but doesn't fall under the trailer pitch will go there. That means that when we jump into the Q&A, I'll have something designed. Why? It creates trust. I have a bit more time. Now we're talking a specific data. A good example might be an ARR or stuff like that. You want to show a graph and numbers. You want to talk or elaborate a little more. They might have different questions. This is your chance to show that you came prepared. A startup we worked with during the summer had 137 slides, which means that during the meetings and the Q&A, they probably present maybe 3 or 4. But if someone asks them, they have it. And we even created a directory. So when you finish the 3 minutes, they'll move on to the directory. When they jump in the question, they just click. It looks like you came very well prepared. One thing that is important while you're pitching, please don't have a thank you slide. Nobody fucking cares. Now, your last slide, especially during a meeting, especially during a physical meeting, will stay the longest. This is my chance to repeat something over and over. I don't need to say it. You will keep reading it. Subconsciously, I can do whatever I want with that slide. It is actually, during a physical meeting, the best real estate you have.
Yeah. Now, it's really interesting because now we're talking about slides. We're talking about a book called Fuck the Slides, and we keep talking about slides. So let me kind of play back to you my interpretation of this arc and what role slides play there, and tell me if I've got it right or wrong. So first of all, you have the trailer, right, which is a hook and a little bit of content that sort of justifies the hook. And this can be in different formats, actually, right? You can do your trailer as a live in-person event at a pitch night, at a demo day, something like that. Or you could have cold email an investor and they're like, yeah, sure, send your deck along. That deck is also a trailer, right? It should just be a few slides, right?
So that would not be the trailer. That would be the toilet deck. And in the book, I explain what is the text that needs to go along with that.
Mm.
There's a complete explain about how to talk about what you do, how you do it, and how to talk about yourself for 70 words. So that means you'll be able to pick these pieces, okay?
Right, but before you have the chance to talk to them, right? Am I, like, quite often people are like, oh, yeah, I've got a startup. Would you like to look at my deck? Now, the deck that I want to see, I think, is more of a trailer deck, right? It's like, okay, get me interested enough to actually.
So it will not create a trailer because it will have more information. It will usually be a bit longer. And remember, once it has more text, people have the tendency to have the same slides to send before and the slides they present.
Yeah.
That's where we're getting it all wrong.
Yep.
They need to be completely separate.
They need to be completely separate. Okay.
This episode of the Startup Podcast is brought to you by Vanta. The team at Vanta are passionate about helping you secure your business by vastly cutting down on the time to get compliant with frameworks like ISO 27001, SOC 2, and Essential 8. Vanta lets you close deals, sleep better at night, and get back to building your product. Help yourself and help the podcast by going to vanta.com/TSP for an exclusive 20% off deal.
All right, so we have our toilet deck, which is, it's telling the story, right? And one of the things, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, is none of these things are actually slideshows. None of them are actually presentations. The toilet deck, we have a bit of a convention that, you know, thanks to PowerPoint and goodness knows what, it's a landscape format set of slides, but it could as easily be a document, right? You have a written story that you are telling, and that is effectively a pre-read for a meeting that you're hoping to have. It may already be booked.
Yeah, some people send a 1-minute video, by the way.
Yeah. But it's a pre-read, right? You're reading the story. you, by the end of the toilet deck or the toilet document, if you're feeling brave, the investor or whoever it is, the lead, understands what you're doing and why it might be interesting. And then you go into a meeting, right? It's very rare to get an investment or a sale without a meeting at some point. And again, I think you're saying there, you do not go into a big presentation. You might give a very short presentation at the start. My experience is quite often you jump straight into questions, right? Because they've already done the pre-reading. The purpose of the meeting is to really get into the detail, have that back and forth, flesh things out. And then, again, you've got the Babylon deck, also not a presentation. It's also a slide deck just because that's sort of the convention. But what we really have is an index file of all the different bits of extra information, of extra data we might want to share. So at no point during any of this are we really doing a slideshow. And that's, I think, where the fuck with slides is really important, because we're telling a story.
Why do people invest? They invest because they like the person, right? The idea might pivot, there might be a lot of changing. People call you and say, I have a gut feeling, I'll go with you, right? You meet them on Thursday, they say, let me think about it. They take the weekend to think about it. They call you on Monday. I thought about it. I trust you. That means you conveyed an emotion. If I can control that emotion, that's where the story comes in. So in every piece or every part, I want to make sure that I can control how the audience interacts with my information. If not, I'm guessing. Yeah. So the writing takes out the improvisation. The improvisation takes out the doubt. Doubt creates security. Now I feel I'm confident. Now I've got this. And that's what people feel.
But yeah, you're very right. It's about feelings. You know, I do some angel investing, so I've sort of been on both sides of the table here. I get quite a lot of decks come in. I'll tell you, from an emotional point of view, what is my most common reaction when I open a slide deck? It's, oh God. And you know why? It's because I am hit with this wall of undifferentiated information, and this thing looks like work. You know, talk about storytelling. Reviewing a slide deck should be enjoyable. I want to read a good story, and that will help me decide if I want to move forward. But again, you know, attention and even more than just attention, like I think that cognitive effort is difficult for people. And so you don't want to make it hard for investors. You might say, well, you know, if I'm putting my blood, sweat, and tears into this thing, they can spare a few minutes to read my deck. Well, if you make it really unpleasant for them, I'll tell you what, you know, the higher the ratio of information to attention, the quicker they'll just be like, next, next.
Yeah, I think we also need to clarify that we can't just go in and have a lot of fluff. So the outcome is that people are, we need a story. They go back and they become an old caregivers. It's not the idea. You need to have enough information. The methodology also explains, how do you collect the information? How do you prioritize what's important, and where do you put the right information? Now, if we will start any pitch to it together and we'll open a PowerPoint, what happens, and that's why we're lacking that story, there's a problem, a solution. That means that every information that's relevant for the problem has to go there. But it's not how we tell stories or information. What I'm teaching is, how do we take the pieces of information and put them in the right places to make a good story? So there's a different way of structuring that. Once we have that, we make sure that we have the interesting, the emotion, the data that you need, okay? It's not like we're going there and saying, you should invest, I'm really nice.
Now, the story is always, I'm going to make you back 100 times your money. That's the story you're telling. But the question is, how do you tell that story in a way that is compelling and convincing, right? And we talked about hooks before, and my own personal discomfort with hooks initially, which is like, they seem a little bit sleazy, right? But actually, hook's only as good as the content that follows. You have to deliver on your hook. Doesn't mean the hook is not important, but it does mean that a hook on its own, just a nice story, doesn't tell people the story of, I'm going to return you 100x, and they're not going to put their money into you if that's all you do.
Yeah. So I worked with a fund that needed to raise their fifth fund in the US. They had 17 slides. We started to work on their pitch. My assumption was that every place they'll go meet, the people they will meet will probably take them to the golf course or a nice coffee place. And that means they will probably also say, don't open your laptop, just tell me a story. Let's talk. It was interesting because they only showed the slides once in 2 weeks of presenting. And when we wanted to have the story with the assumption that there'll be in a golf course and so on, what would be interesting to start up a discussion? And it went something along the lines of, you know, about 4 years ago, my partner called me and I was in the soccer world match in Russia. And he told me, we got the license to be a licensed fund. And it's been 4 years, 50 investments, 7 unicorns and 2 exits. And we're still here raising our 5th fund. Now tell me you don't want to be a part of this, because in the next 2.5 minutes, he's going to tell you how you can enjoy a piece on that thing.
You want people to feel excited at the end of your story.
Or that they might miss something.
Yeah, I think, you know, we talk about investor FOMO. I think that's definitely a big part, right? Fear of missing out. And yeah, you know, again, when I look at the decks that excite me, like I said, my most common reaction is, oh God. But the ones where I am more likely to end up investing are ones when by the end of the deck, I'm kind of got a little bit of a tingly feeling. I'm like, oh damn, I better jump on this. It's exciting. And so again, we're talking about emotions. And I remember I posted about this on LinkedIn a few weeks ago, and I got some pushback saying, well, you know, it's just ripe for bias. And if you say you invest in the people and the story, and there's an element of that is true, I won't deny it. But when we talk about using the feelings and the sense of investing in good founders, is this a story that I believe in, that I'm excited about? And although there's an intellectual process here, right? Like you said, Nir, it's not just a Care Bears story. You need the numbers, you need the story, you need the information about the industry, your approach, why you're the right people to do it. The end result is a feeling. The feeling is, damn, I don't want to miss this. I want to be part of it.
Can we do a quick structure?
Go ahead.
If you take 500 words, about 70 words would be the hook. That's how you open. As I said, the rest needs to help me prove that point. The ending would be about 10%. I need to repeat and make sure that you're on board with everything that's happening. That means that in the middle, you have between 6 and 8 paragraphs. That's it. And each paragraph is about 30, 40 words. So when we structure everything, that means that about 1 or 2 pieces of information in a paragraph, you're almost done. Now you can start editing. And the book takes you through the whole process of how to do it. Each paragraph has one key message and the emotions that are associated with it. It's the first time you'll actually see a flow. The problem is, people will come to these events, say, thank you, it was great, go home and do, guess what? Exactly the same thing. The next time, pick up a pen and a paper, don't pick up a slide. When you start writing and you start measuring, why? Because I can see the words I was using. When I can see the words, I say, that word isn't exactly what I wanted it to mean. Now we can start saying, if we look at the same thing, can we edit? And a big thing is, can we actually sculpture? Take out the easiest way, go home, open a Zoom, recall your best pitch, transcribe it, it's shit. By the way, not because you're not good, you're amazing, because you haven't practiced enough. Same will go with any skill you want to practice, right? Now take that, change a few things, do it again, record it again and again. You will become amazing. How weird is that today? You go ask for a time from a client, from a friend, advice, or from a VC, and you're wasting their time because you're improvising. Going into a meeting, talking for 15 minutes, hoping to get the best, yet you didn't come prepared. And again, the visual will not say, you are the presentation. So that's the best tip I can give anyone. Go and practice. That's why I will record these things.
Yeah, I think some people are natural storytellers, but most people are not. And, you know, I think like, there is the other extreme, right? The founders who are amazing storytellers who can raise a lot of capital, and then in the end, there's not enough substance to it. But the truth is, you know, and that's upsetting, but the thing that's far more upsetting is the founders who have just really great concepts, really great ideas that they can build a business, that they need to raise for, but they can't get their story across.
Because,
and that is because they don't practice it, because they don't realize it's a core skill for what they're doing.
Yeah. And they're amazing. So over the last 6 or 7 years, I've met extraordinary people. Some of them, I really don't understand what they say, but they sound very smart. At the end, I do marketing. You know. Now, what I've learned is the easiest way to solve this is having your pitch in 3 levels. The first level, which I don't understand most of it, is an engineer talks to an engineer. And we sit differently with the developers.
That's amazing idea.
I have no idea what they're saying. So if I meet them, for example, in the street, in a meeting here or in a bar, and they'll explain what they do, guess what? I'm out. I can't help them because I cannot repeat what they said. So the first level is an engineer talks to an engineer and they're happy. They love each other. The second would be an engineer talking to a VC or a semi-professional, someone a bit more versed in the industry. And the third level would be an engineer talks to a stranger in a bar. If your pitch is in three levels, you will be able to use the right things with the right people. And often, and I always joke, I own bars in Tel Aviv because I always joke that if you have a drinking problem, it's cheaper to own the bar. One of the things is we will meet, especially in Tel Aviv, everybody has an idea. And I'll meet people, and when they explain, I don't understand. And I'll ask again because I'm interested, I still don't understand, I'm out. That means maybe I had the right connection, but the story they told wasn't good enough for me to help them. And that's how we measure. If someone, a stranger, when you tell them what you actually do, they say, that's interesting, how? Then you have a good one.
So, now compared to, say, 2021, the capital raising environment is much tougher now. Does that make storytelling more or less important in your view, or different in any way?
I think we're seeing the difference between the markets now. So I'm happy to say that because I travel every 3 or 4 days, I move a city or a country. I get to see a lot of difference in the same, in a short amount span of time, I see a lot of differences. Listen, we don't change your product. We don't change how much you want to raise. We don't change the list of founders. We only change your story. And we're able to take people from not raising or not selling to doing raising and selling. The only thing we change is the story. That means that when a crisis happens, this is more important. What people are doing is instead of fixing their pitch or their story or their messaging or the content on their website, they keep developing. It will not save us. I had a post a few weeks ago about please stop building, stop writing. I think it was on the newsletter maybe. And I'm asking people, stop, because you can do anything in writing. You can imagine whatever you want, right? People write books about dragons and submarines and stuff. You can do whatever you want. Then sell it is a good idea.
Okay, so that's a good hook, because I don't know about the rest of you, but now I'm wondering, it's like, how do you change the story? You have your 2021 story, and now it's 2024. How does the story change?
I think now it's very practical. Now people need to be careful about what they do or where they invest their money, right? That means that they're willing to meet. Everybody's ready to meet. Most will not make the investment or will not buy the product. That means that I can be much better without a lot of effort. I only change the story. So we're seeing now that when we prep companies, for example, they stand out. So if that VC would meet 15 or 20 companies a week, they remember ours. And that's what you want to have. Why should people remember your story? Again, if you invest in one cybersecurity or the other, most people don't understand what cybersecurity does, yet they love this. So this is what we want to pitch.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. In 2021, you could say, oh, we're a blockchain technology for shipping. And they're like, yep, take my money.
Here's your check.
And now you need to tell a good story. I see a lot of pitches now that are like AI, it's the new blockchain, except that I think it has more legs. But I think from the point of view of being a hype technology, is that the sort of thing that you feel is important to adjust your storytelling around, or is it actually a distraction?
It's a great question. If I ask most of you to take out your mobile phones and look at your websites, and I say take out all the buzzwords, you won't have a lot of words left. And yet most people say we need AI. We must have AI. It's the buzzword of the day. And VCs like it. I think that's great. You might incorporate it, but today we have AI in everything. I just built some stupid app on Bubble and added ChatGPT. You know, like, so again, it might be a short thing because you want to make sure you do the name drop, the buzzword, but it won't hold anymore because everyone now has AI. So what's your differentiator in it? What if you have a great solution? How you achieve it is using this and this technologies and AI. So I don't need to, again, if we believe that piece of information is important, but where do we put it? You know, every website now has AI.
It's not a core part of the story.
No, it has to be incorporated because people are expecting that.
Makes a lot of sense. So in a moment, we're going to go over to at least one pitch from the audience. We've got a brave volunteer who'll give a 2-minute pitch and you'll give them some real-time feedback. But first, I thought perhaps you could, as an example, take the next 2 minutes or so to pitch your book.
I don't think we need 2 minutes, but everything we do in life is about a story. Stories we tell that people remember. Whether I want to convince someone, whether I want to sell something, whether I want to raise capital, we tell stories. But this was a lie. It's not about storytelling, I believe. It's about story writing. And the book is a step-by-step methodology that will help improve almost every aspect of your life. Like any other skill, you might not become the best runner. You might not win a marathon. You might not win the next storytelling competition. Boy, you will get much, much better. And that's what the book about.
Shut up and take my money. Okay, fantastic. All right, thanks so much, Nira. So I think at this stage, we'll take pictures.
Thanks, everyone. My name's David. I do have some slides. Would anyone actually like to see them based on what we've just heard, or should I just tell you?
It's up to you.
Whatever you want. You want
to share some? Can I fire up the laptop? And
let's do it without the slides.
Sure, okay.
Amazing.
So let's imagine the projector doesn't work.
Whoops. Sort of doesn't.
Perfect. So my background's in financial services and consulting, and the startup that I have is based around building a compelling business case faster and easier for organizations that have business and technology projects. So there's two parts to the proposition. In terms of the business case, there's a methodology, which is a 3-step, 30 tasks to help you do things faster and easier. And then there's an enterprise software platform, built a prototype for that, and it actually allows you to automate the data, engage the audience, and again, build things faster and easier. So the saving is up to 30% of the costs to build the business case for your project. That's it in a nutshell.
First of all, thank you.
No problem.
Appreciate it.
Now I'm going to apologize because I'm going to be a bit Israeli and we're a bit blunt. Can you tell me in one sentence what you actually do?
I build compelling business cases faster and easier.
Great. How many people know what a business case is?
Great.
I don't.
You do or you don't?
I don't. What is it?
So a business case is where an organization needs to state what it's planning to do for a project in order to get approval internally to spend money.
Okay. So you'll help me approve projects better?
Absolutely. Help design them. You collect the information, do the documentation, and then deliver it for approval.
So you'll help me design, implement, and deliver a project?
No, I'll help you do the business case for the project.
Okay.
Then you need to launch the project. Then you need to deliver it yourself.
So only the design part?
The approval, design and approval, yes.
And internally?
Yes.
Great. So I'm asking you again, what do you actually do in one sentence? You help companies achieve what?
I help you determine which project you're going to prioritize and how you're going to get return on investment and do it faster and easier.
Amazing. I understand. So the problem is, I come from a different place, and I don't exactly understand that term.
Yep.
Now I understand what you do, and I understand which stage you're in, I understand what are the options. Can you give an example where you saved time and money?
Yeah, sure. So with a recent client, we had a new CRM system. The business case had been running for 2 years, so over $2 million of investment for a $20 million projected spend. And to be able to complete that business case took a further 6 months, $500,000. And that was done within half the time that they expected to have to continue doing.
Using your solution?
Parts of it, yes.
Prototyping
it and testing, yes, absolutely, yeah.
Amazing. So what if we took that piece and started that as the hook? What if we said that, and this is exactly what we can own.
Yep.
We're actually helping you do 1, 2, 3.
Yep.
This is the stages we're in. This is how much money we're raising. And this is what we're looking to achieve. Make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now I understand.
Can I ask you a question? How do I overcome the fact that not everyone's going to understand what a business case is?
So
I make the pitch to people who do understand, they get it like that.
Could I?
I make the pitch to others who don't know what a business case is or think they know what it is and maybe they don't in the same context that I'm describing. How do I overcome that?
Amazing. So I go back to the 3 levels. I don't understand. I'm the stranger in the bar. Yep. I just don't understand. interesting thing. 90% of the people we meet will feel uncomfortable saying, especially on a live video, I don't understand. So that means I feel a bit dumb and I'm out and I'm shut. I won't continue the conversation. So if you explain to me a project and it was delayed and that was the price and that was the expense, I can understand. Funny enough, by the way, the experience share I have is about the fact that we can't build our subway in Israel. It sucks. When you say a project delayed and things, that was where it took me. Everyone would have an experience. Everybody knows, every person in the room, what it means to have a project. It's delayed. It's costing too much.
Yes.
Okay. And it's taking too long. And that's exactly what we can do for a business. This is the solution. We call it, and then you can refer it to as a business case and then keep going.
Sure.
Could I also maybe suggest something? So what it sounds like to me is that businesses, or large organizations, waste huge amounts of time and money deciding what to do instead of just doing it. And you offer a solution that massively reduces that waste without reducing the quality of the decisions.
Yes, it's about productivity, firstly, and it's also about waste. And that's one of the reasons, well, those are two of the reasons why I'm even doing this.
Huh? Saving people money is always a great hook.
Yeah, cool.
So now we have a list of things. So we have a hook, we have a story that we can incorporate, and this is what we do. Then we talk about productivity and so on. Note, I don't necessarily need to write the whole thing, but I'm now starting to write notes on the side. And suddenly, I need to talk about this. When am I going to talk about productivity and so on? And that's how we start the structure.
I think the other challenge I face is it's not an inherently exciting topic. Right.
What do you saving money is exciting.
Half the audience, I saw it, like when I mentioned the word business case, half the audience are confused. Right. And I can tell.
Every person on the audience, I think, would love to know that if they sign a project, they know how much it's going to cost and how long it's going to take.
Right?
Yeah. That's a great proposition.
I want to know how much it's going to, I don't mind if it costs 2 million, 2 million and a half. Will it take 6 months or 8 months? Tell me how long. How much, and I'm done. You're creating a certain amount of certainty.
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect.
So I'll give you the last challenge. My email is here somewhere.
Sure.
Email me. If you look at the top of your website, what would be the one sentence that would make people scroll?
What it currently says right now is I help you to launch projects more successfully.
I have a bunch of projects. I come to you.
Yep.
But I'm not an enterprise.
Say again?
I'm not an enterprise yet.
So I come to you?
Of course, and it could be used in any scenario, quite frankly.
If we want to launch a project together, we can come to you?
Yeah, but then you could choose which parts of the actual platform you want to use, which parts of the methodology. It's very flexible, so you don't have to follow it from A to Z. You could choose the bits that work best for you and can complement what you're already doing. Or if you're an existing organization, you might have various methodologies.
So I'll leave us with this. You said now organization again, I'm not an organization. What would be the one sentence where people read on the top of the website say, I'm interested, I'll keep scrolling one? And secondly, do I really need to sell to everyone? I can't sell to everyone unless I'm a chewing gum and that doesn't work everywhere else.
So I think we had a comment from the audience as well.
Yeah, hi, we met before.
Yeah, Robert, how are you doing?
I think that what you're trying to do is help organizations, but also startups and people who invest in startups know where to invest. Today, even in large organizations, that's been my territory for a long time, they might have $1 million to invest. Which bets are they going to place? And that's how what you're doing can help them.
Yeah, perfect. Good. I like the feedback about organizations and who I'm selling to, who I'm not. That's really good as well. Thought a lot about that,
so,
to be honest. So
very technically, from a marketing standpoint, and not specifically for the book, I want to have a situation where every person on the planet knows who I am. I want the relevant person in a geographical or the size of the business or whatever to know a bit more or maybe be interested. I want the people who are actually looking for what I have to solve now at the right place right, to come to. That means that in the end, they need a very, very small niche, even if we're talking about 1 million people.
It's A-CASE. It's called A-CASE. It stands for Agile Case. So Agile Business Case is the term.
Great.
You see, it was worth coming on stage.
We're nearly at time here. I think we probably...
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, David.
Thanks for being a good audience as well. Thanks.
Appreciate it. I'd say we have time for one question from the audience or a pitch.
My name's Jen and I'm from an app called Hey You. Can you be a building management company in like a CBD? That's who I'd like to pitch to.
Yeah, you can be, right? Yeah, we can do it. We can do it.
Okay, great. So you guys have a bunch of retail tenants here that are struggling with the changes in how offices are working, work from home. It's difficult for your food and beverage retailers, your cafes, your restaurants in your building to get the same kind of trade that they were getting pre-COVID now that the way of working is happening. You have a bunch of commercial offices in the building that you would like to retain as tenants. What we'd like to help you do is run marketing campaigns that directly attract new customers to the center and spending at those cafes and lunch retailers. We've got an app where thousands of people every day are using it to pre-order their food and coffee so that they don't have to wait in line. It saves them time, and retailers prefer to use it because it makes them more efficient. It solves a time problem so that they can make more money at peak hours of morning breakfast coffee and lunch. They can ship more. They don't have to take 30 seconds to take an order. It comes through in an instant, certainly accepted. So what we'd like to do with you, and what we've done for 30 plus building managements throughout the city, is run campaigns, look at your marketing calendar that you have, and help you to run measurable marketing campaigns like $2 coffees, 2-for-1 lunches, 20% off lunch, help you achieve your marketing objectives through using this app as a measurable way of running efficient, effective promotions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
First of all,
thank you.
Quick question. Over here, you need to go through the building management?
No, so we work directly with retailers, but we found that it is helpful for us to work with building management because they can sometimes want to pay for the retailers, like pay our rate, and they have budgets which they can spend on promotions to bring into the...
So I think, I mean, if I understand correctly, the reason they want to do that is because they're worried about losing those tenants, right?
Yes, they're worried about losing those tenants.
So speak to that fear, right? So I would say, so tell me what you think there is, like, the rest of the world has mostly moved on from the pandemic, but your tenants haven't. If you don't help them, you're going to end up with vacancies. We help you help your tenants.
Mm-hmm. So basically, you might help them make a bit more money to extend the time that they survive or the time they stay.
Yes. At the end
every
of
food
it,
and beverage
yes.
business that opens has what we call a sand clock.
A what? A sand clock. Okay, yeah.
Okay, and I've done 4 of these, so I know. And you open and you hope for the best, okay? Most of them are struggling to make a bit of money. So basically, you're telling me that you've done 30 different deals like this?
30, promotional activities. Great. With centers across the Sydney CBD.
Interesting.
Hi, so we're looking to add you as the 31st building joining our company. The interesting thing is we can also help your tenants stay longer, make more money.
Sorry, it's not the 31st because we've done repeat campaigns with one, so you might be the 8th.
Amazing.
So we've already had 7 successful ones?
Yeah.
The numbers
are more successful than others.
Like everything in life.
Don't say that.
No, in marketing, it's always like that. But
you can turn everything around. Now you're inviting me to join something that, if not, I might be missing.
Uh-huh.
And you're telling me they might have a budget for that even.
Yeah.
So what's the, why not? Why shouldn't they join?
Why shouldn't they join? If I haven't asked them, if I'm not getting out there. Why shouldn't they join if they don't have budgets to spend on that?
Then you ask to go to the coffee place.
Yeah.
Easy. So you can do it 10 a week? How many buildings can you go to?
It takes a bit more effort. So we could probably do 10 a week to pitch.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I should be doing that.
Great. So you have my email. Send me your pitch. We'll work on that.
Thank you. Really?
Why shouldn't the coffee place take it? If I go into every coffee place and have, I give you guys a sticker, which is amazing, by the way, marketing-wise, 2 things, stickers and socks. Best marketing effort you can make. It's worth a lot of money. Now, if you go into every coffee shop and leave a card and say, hey, if you want to make a bit more money without any effort, give me a call.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do it? We have an app. We'll get more people to come in during peak hour, low hour, whatever you have.
Okay.
when you talk to them, you ask them to help you connect with the building.
Yeah.
Great. Now it's easy to go to 100 coffee places a day.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they have a value proposition. I would create a different pitch for the buildings. Yeah. But that, then again, they're already joining a movement. Something started. Cool. Yeah. You can join now, you can join in 2 months.
Okay, good. Yeah. Okay. Nice. Sweet. Thank you very much.
My
Thanks,
pleasure.
Guys.
Okay, thank you. All right, I think we're over time now. So let's wrap it up. Neil Zavaro, it's been an absolute pleasure. If folks want to find you, where can they make contact?
Yeah, so I'm inviting everyone to scan this, and I'll tell you why. Traveling the world for 12 months is kind of lonely. So people are joining my the story letter, and it's been interesting because people reply. So I share a little bit about tips on writing some things or interesting case studies I've met along the way, and a bit about my journey to scale this and what can happen. So after 13 years with a marketing agency, I'm alone again. I can do whatever I want, and I'm scaling this business. So you're more than invited to join, and feel free to reply. Because sometimes it makes me smile. So thank you.
And the book? Available in hardcover on Kindle. I think an audiobook version is
so on its way. The audiobook will come out in end of April with about 10% more. But it's a surprise about the content.
Okay, fantastic. And also, of course, we have the Startup Podcast. That's me and my co-host Prasad is normally with us as well. You can find us in any listening app or on YouTube or on our website, tsp.show. So I'd love it if you check us out there too. All right, thanks so much for coming.
Before we end, just to prove that we are live, and we have an online question from our audience.
There we go.
And the question
I hope
is,
it's about my mom.
I don't know. from Alan Russell, and he is asking, if he doesn't know those stakeholders that he's meeting too well yet, what are the shortcuts you can suggest how to build credibility and influence without a lot of airtime with them?
So if we wrapped up this whole idea of having a short pitch, people always say, know your audience, which I think is a bit wrong. I don't know the audience. I have never met you. I don't know how your day's been. I don't know what you're going through. I only have an option to take you into my journey. And I think that's the best thing. And many times, especially here traveling, I'll meet people I've never met before. And they're like, oh, tell me your story. What's your pitch? What's your spiel? So if you have a good 30-second story or a good hook about who you are, if they like it, they'll keep talking. And again, that's explained in the book. Thank you for the online question. Guys, thank you very much for coming. I appreciate it. And I think we had a good time.
A lot of fun. Hope you did too.
Thank you.
This episode of the Startup Podcast was brought to you by Vanta. Vanta helps businesses get and stay compliant by automating up to 90% of the work for the most in-demand compliance frameworks. With over 200 integrations, you can easily monitor and secure the tools your business relies on. Head to vanta.com/TSP for 20% off their incredible offering and start unlocking extra revenue today.